Welcome to Bed Knobs and Broom Flicks, the podcast that talks about witches, man-witches, warlocks, sorcerers, and other magic practitioners in movies, television, comic books, books, and just about everything. Sorry, this show will include spoilers. You've been warned. My name is Jane.
And I'm Linda, but this week you can call me Mother Cheese, the second oldest and most rickety of all the mothers.
Is this because of how you've been feeling lately?
Yes. I should let the listeners know I am still on muscle relaxers, so I'm just going to cruise right on through this episode. Just keep on rocking. Fuck it, we'll do it live.
Do it live. Just do it live. Linda, we can't do it live. I said do it live.
Do it live.
Help me, people. So today we are discussing the final installment in Argento's The Three Mothers trilogy, Mother of Tears. This was, I think, our best reaction that we both had was it was a movie. The basic
question
plot,
mark?
It had movie-like qualities. it had a plot.
It had credits.
I mean, it had credits. Man, did it have credits. Holy shit. But, I mean, the basic premise is, with the previous two movies, you obviously had the other mothers getting killed in very, almost stupid, if really yes. quick fashion. Yeah.
Inferno, like, The mother really wasn't in it very long.
I know, and her death was like, you could have done something, I think, about this.
Yeah. And then, like, once she does pop up, it's like, oh, I'm dying now, so cool.
I'm death, dead.
It's like, yeah, wow. Exactly. Like, well, that was easy. Okay.
Yeah, so I guess we can maybe get this. So we're focusing on the third mother in this movie, mm-hmm. and it takes place, I think I had like 28 years after Inferno was made, so a lot of time has passed, and it focuses around a young woman who, through happenstance, because I always love how a lot of these always feel like it randomly happens to some of these people, even though she's yeah. supposed to have some sort of psychic ability, and she's gonna be able to stop the Mother of Tears. And at the time, the Mother of Tears is risen up and got her followers back, and she's causing chaos all over streets, cities. There's a lot of... I have some...
It's confusing.
Jane has an opinion. Jane has some comments on... I don't know what kind of chaos this person fully induced on the masses.
And this is Mother or Mater Lacrimarum. And it's in Rome, and she's supposed to be the most beautiful of the three martyrs.
I miss our 1980s version. She was really yeah. pretty, but I again, she wasn't holding a cat this time around. And I think the cat really sold it.
I miss my yes. kitty, you guys. I miss having a kitty. It's no longer Meowter Tenebrarum.
I would totally follow that.
Muscle relaxers, guys. Oh, so then what happens?
Evil is defeated, dead.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
I mean, we'll go into some of our parts and a lot of the commentary that I had during this movie, but I think I don't know how else you can describe this plot where it's, mm-hmm. you know, a very kind of slammed together, haphazardly horror movie with, you know, jump from plot to plot to plot and dead, good, opera.
Yeah.
Like, yes, opera. Really, I didn't mispronounce that. Opera.
Well, it was released in 2007, but it had such an like 70s, 80s feeling to it.
Yeah, I honestly, I mean, granted, I never heard of this movie. There was a time when I knew a lot about which movies were coming out and when. This may have been during a time when I just kind of stopped caring. And just whatever I could find that looked cool, I'd go and see. But yeah, I don't remember this movie being advertised at all. Like, at least I have an excuse for, like, the 1980s and the 1970s version, because I wasn't born yet. But this one, I'm like, I don't remember this movie. I don't. It's like, was this direct to video? I don't know.
Well, I can tell you that their budget was $3.5 million, or at least thereabouts, and it grossed just about worldwide $3.1 million, so it did not do so damn well.
Oh, that's really bad, especially when you get the worldwide numbers. It's like, oh, that even includes worldwide? Oh,
yeah.
Oh, God.
Sad. Yeah, they lost money on this joint. It
no
was
shit.
Of course, written by Dario Argento again, and also directed by Dario Argento, which gets really kind of icky when you realize that there's a scene, a shower scene, where the main character is taking a shower. Obviously, she's topless, shows her boobies, and that is his daughter, Dario Argento's daughter.
Asia Argento.
Yes.
Yes.
And I remember I was watching the movie. I was like, oh hey, boobies. Oh God. Like, he directed his daughter in a nudie scene. Ew. That's pretty gross.
Now, come on. He's seen her naked growing up. No, okay. I'm going to make this worse for you. God. Just for you.
Well, also, a little cool little factoid here. The character that plays the ghost of her mother is her real mother, Daria Nicolodi, who you may know from the previous movies. She co-wrote the script for Suspiria and for Inferno. And in Inferno, she was the weird rich neighbor.
Oh, God. Lady. Oh, seriously?
Yeah, that was her.
I didn't know that. So, oh my God. That I'm sorry. I'm just remembering her scenes. I'm just like, oh, those were so bad.
That's fair.
I'm thinking like, your husband said that we need to be more positive, and I'm like, I can't. I'm not on enough muscle relaxers, and I don't have any Xanax. I can't even be mellow.
Oh, hey, I've got something positive
anyway,
to say, and it okay. has nothing to do with the movie. Ron Howard.
In fact, we're going to talk about how nice the clouds look today.
Yeah, why not? Ron Howard confirmed that there's a Willow series coming to Disney Plus. So, I mean, that's something, right?
Wait, is that legitimately?
Yeah. Good?
Oh, okay, I thought you were actually going to say something positive about the movie. You actually had me. I was like, oh, wait, what? Oh, God. You've been Linda'd.
No, fuck the movie. I don't have much positive things to say about this movie.
We're going to come up with some stuff that actually has some really good reception to it to actually review. So we won't be this negative or down on a movie. But this movie, it's what did Adrian say? It's skippable.
Yes. He described it as definitely skippable.
We need to take other people's advice sometimes.
Of course, no, we haven't.
We promised we would soldier through all of these. All of them.
Of course, we haven't gotten to the Troma's witchcraft series. Oh, God, that's going to kill us. I think they're up to 18. I love Trauma, but that's
I'm sitting here thinking, like,
movies,
has Uwe Boll done any witch movies right now? Going like, do you want to really kill us? He did Dungeons and Dragons. I know.
Oh God, yeah. Oh, I blocked that one out pretty successfully.
I think I remember watching that, or not really watching it. A guy I was dating at the time rented for him and his friend. And I kind of started watching it. And then I went into the kitchen to just like not be with the movie and said I was going to make food. I figured out what was going on based off of the noises that were coming out of the bedroom. that's a different story. We're talking about another movie. We'll talk about this movie now.
So I have in my notes that I laughed out loud at a couple times, including even before the movie starts with the little like producer card in the beginning. It says, Dimension Films Extreme. I couldn't help it. I was just like, oh my God, this is so fucking corny. Okay, Dimension Films Extreme. And toward the beginning, there's one part where they're taking a picture of the urn that they dug up. And there's some random monster or demon appears in the camera lens. And
yeah, that's I think it. I called it Curse Camera. Yeah. I mean, my comments on the opening were just because like Inferno was so short of an opening. Mm-hmm. It was like Inferno on. Like at one point I was like, wait, did the movie, like when I was watching Inferno, I was like, did the movie just start? Oh shit, I have to go back because I need to start taking notes. But this one, it's like it more than made up for at the opening. Like there was like an opera soundtrack to it. At one point, both my husband and I started like humming the Phantom Menace theme. So we're like, da, 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 da. And there's like pictures of like all these demons and stuff, except the pentagram was not upside down. If you're going to try to do Satanism, it was not upside down. Stick to your stereotypes, okay?
God damn it. Well, once again, like I loved the closing credits theme song.
Yeah, I did totally too. Thought it was banging. We loved it.
I looked into it, and as it turns out, the lyrics were written by none other than Danny Filth, the singer and founding member of Cradle of Filth, the metal band. Fucking love them. That is awesome. And it was composed by the music part was composed and performed by Claudio Simonetti from Goblin, and the song was performed by his other band, Demonia. And okay. Goblin does a lot of has done a lot, almost like I'd say most of Dario Argento's soundtracks.
So, and who wrote the lyrics?
It was Danny Filth from Cradle of Filth. The lyrics were Danny Filth.
Did you because the movie had that issue that I always have where the loud parts are louder than normal but the talking's really quiet, I ended up putting closed captioning on. Did you ever turn closed captioning on for the lyrics?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was reading through them.
That's what I was asking if you knew, because I was reading those and I just burst into laughter through most of them.
It's still banging.
I mean, it's still banging, but it's like, she will be your death. Yes. It's like, what? I'm like, oh, God, it's like a middle school rock band's lyrics.
Well, I hate to say it because I love metal and metal bands, but like if you listen to some of the lyrics of like awesome metal songs, it just kind of ruins it sometimes. And I love metal songs when it sounds like it's like the front person is a Cookie Monster.
cookie.
You see, I like my kind of metal is ones where it's a female or male soprano singing. So I actually do understand what they're saying, and it's all really pretty with a metal background. So when I hear this, it's like a very metal opera thing, I'm like, oh, that's cool. And then I'm reading the lyrics going like, oh, for the love of all that's holy. honey, read these lyrics. As he just puts his hand to his hands and like, oh. Ooh, that's clearly me talking to my husband at that time, which, speaking of which, my husband, he definitely zoned in and out of this one as well. But one of the favorite moments we had was, and this was in the trailer, and his response to this was, so in the beginning, in the scene when they're in the graveyard of that church and they've dug up the articles of the last mother. And you see the little mini excavator, and... That guy literally drives into the hole.
Yes.
My husband just yelled out, like, he literally drove into the hole. Yeah. Like, he did not just fall in. He just drove in. And then, like, falls out. And he's like, how's that dude not dead? A huge piece of equipment just basically landed on
him. I know. That's what I was thinking. Like, oh, so that guy's dead. That guy's not dead?
No, he's not dead. Okay. I mean, technically, I guess he fell with it. But at the same time, it's like, how are you not hurt? He's like, he literally drove into it, was his biggest complaint.
Yeah. I mean, okay, I'm going to say it. The stupid parts, like, start up real quick.
Oh, yeah.
From the get-go. But in the beginning, when the lady is going to show Sarah the urn, I thought it was going to get all porny. Because, like, it just had that feeling of, like,
did you think it was going to get porny, or were you hoping it was going to get porny?
A little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. She's like, come on, I want to show you something. Come on.
It just earlier, happened. Linda was watching witchcraft.
I can't expect that. Like, I had a baseline.
I'm just like, oh no, this is getting way too dirty in my brain. My brain just broke thinking about that.
Oh, but also I have in my notes, right after that part, because she cuts her, like, the woman who, like, she's trying to open what they keep calling an urn.
Yeah, I was saying that too. I was like, how is this an urn? But yeah, she cut her hand.
It's a box.
They all cut their freaking hand.
Yes. So, like, she accidentally cuts her hand with the knife that she's using to open it, because it's sealed shut with wax. And then, like, she's still working on it. And I have in my notes, I love that she takes off her gloves after cutting herself and just handles the artifact without the gloves. And by all means, bleed all over the ancient artifact.
Well, I was just watching her, like, go, whoo, like, just really hard on everything. I was like, why are you blowing so hard?
Well, I was thinking, like, it's my same problem I had with, was it the Enchantress in Suicide Squad? Where it's like, okay, you're supposed to be a professional. Yeah. Why are you breaking the goddamn artifact? Well, you know, like, with her, like, why the fuck are you bleeding all over it? Stop. Stop. Get a new goddamn glove.
Well, it's sort of like in, did you ever see The Ninth Gate?
Yes, yes.
And they're all smoking around all these old books. You're just like, stop it. Why won't you stop, you? Like, only that one woman in France was sort of like, I did not give you permission to do that. It's like, thank you. Somebody understands.
Well, I keep thinking, like, wasn't there anybody on set that could have said, you know.
No, they're making a movie.
Ooh, I also have it in my notes that I would be so screwed in this situation because I love monkeys.
Oh, I was curious. Yeah, I forgot about your... Okay, so for any of you who never listened to any of our very early episodes, I didn't record at home. I would go over to Linda's and record. And in order to keep so we didn't pick each other up, we'd record in separate rooms. So she stuck me in this room that's basically surrounded with stuffed monkeys and one Pickle Rick. So yep. I'm basically, I don't have a fear of, like, dolls or stuffed animals or anything, but this would be one of those things where it's like, you know, a horror movie started out like this.
Well, and now surrounded, it's gotten a little creepier because I added all my Nick Cage stuff in there, or most of it.
Trying to not let anybody come over again.
She discovered it. The secret. Carlo calls it the guest room. I call it the Monkey Congress Room of Reflection. But, you know, tomato, tomato. I felt like it's very welcoming, but
they
whatever.
Will have order in this court.
Oh, I do like to meditate in there sometimes. The monkeys just help. And you know, Nick Cage staring at me just kind of helps bring me to my zen place or something.
Whatever makes you happy.
Nick Cage and monkeys. But yeah, that monkey
Carlos sheds a sad tear. My God.
Oh, he knows I love him. Whatever. But yeah, like I saw that, like, there's an evil monkey, obviously, and he's kind of like the lookout for these, I don't know what they are, demons, monsters, something.
Yeah, because demons basically pop out of this urn, or what happens is earthquake! Yeah. As she's trying to open up this urn thing, his demons come out, you know, shove something into her mouth, which we, my husband and I, when we watched it, he's like, wait, what the hell just happened there? And
yeah, what the fuck was her mouth,
like, basically, I don't know, like, because it looked like one of those torture devices that they would sometimes use to, like, stretch somebody's jaw, or in some cases stretch other orifices as a method of torture. Ooh. Like, that's what it made me think of, is what, but it's like, but then they just take it out and it's like,
yeah,
and then they just disembowel
and her mouth's all, like, fucked up.
Yeah, they disembowel her and, like, hang her with her own intestines is what it looks like while she's still alive. Like, and I just like how, like, the main character, who's Sara, just kind of, like, quietly walks away.
Yes, that's what I thought. I would just be slowly backing out quietly, like, well, wrong
I'm
room.
Not getting involved in this orgy. And gone.
And, you know, to be fair, okay, there's something positive. I thought that was a cool kill scene.
Yeah.
Obviously, they could have done without fucking up her mouth and jaw, but I mean, it looked cool with the special effects makeup, so.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking kind of like, man, if they had, like, maybe, like, shoved the thing to her mouth and ripped out her tongue, and she couldn't close her mouth, and her tongue was all over, and I was like, oh my god, I'm getting really dark here. Like, how could they have tortured this woman more?
But yeah, the monkey's kind of acting like, I guess, like a lookout for the monsters, demons, golems, whatever they are. And
it really doesn't matter, because you don't really see them after that.
No.
One more other, like, a kind of like a jump scare during a dream that she has. You see it. But after that, like, all the people who do the killing are basically humans.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's... Yeah, they kind of like a short-lived sort of thing.
Yeah, it's very unclear as to what the fuck was going on there. But with the monkey, I I thought, in fact, I think Carlo could hear me downstairs as I was watching. I was like, oh, monkey! So I would be hiding behind some curtains. I'm like, oh, come here, little guy.
She's just trying to hide and get away.
I'd be like, sweet, free monkey.
Why are you screaming at me? Oh, shit.
Shit. Here we go. I'm about to get disemboweled, aren't I? Oh, what a sticky situation.
Well, and then, like, so I guess the continue, how she escapes that the door magically opens, and mm-hmm. they kind of explain this later on. I think the whole, I guess I kind of did the description of the whole psychic thing and also being able to communicate with the dead and the dead helping her.
Because I guess there's no other freaking way through.
Yeah, I don't know, because she goes into something, it was locked, and yeah, I was like, oh, God, this movie. It's, yeah, I mean, it was just a way to get her to escape, which was important, because she is the main character who's supposed to complete the task and everything, but again, it's one of those things where it's like, I know they're the main character, but you really do need to build out, I don't know, a better, I'm just remembering this movie now, and it's like, oh, yeah. Well, It's like, I get that they're trying to say that she, I'm going to start rocking back and forth later. I get that they're trying to, they later on try to establish that she has some sort of psychic connection. She can see the ghost world and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And she obviously is, like, hearing voices because it's telling her to run. And at the same time, just like, she's either having a nervous breakdown because she just imagined seeing her friend getting hung with her intestines, or she's actually hearing spirits. And you don't know who the voice is. Later on, you obviously find out later on that it's her deceased mother, which they try to establish a history that I don't think they earned on why this girl is so important. So it's, I don't know. It's, so anyways, the door opens, she gets out, the police come. Police obviously don't believe her, because who would, especially when she starts talking about a monkey. Which I think I wrote down, like, was it the monkey they didn't believe? Was that the part right. where they stopped believing? The person's hung and strung up by their intestines. It's like, this monkey thing, I think, makes you a liar.
Well, and later on, she's, like, avoiding the police. She's, like, running away from the police. And they didn't say why. And so I have it in my notes, wait, why is she avoiding the police?
Well, my understanding is that the police... on their own are suspect of her. Like, they don't believe she's telling the truth, but she doesn't seem to have any foreknowledge that they do. It's not like they said, hey,
yeah,
come back to the station or come down here. It's not like there's anything to, like, raise her hackles on. I think they think I just murdered my friend. So,
yeah.
And instead she goes back to the owner. He's the owner, right, of the museum?
Her boyfriend.
Yeah, the owner boyfriend who... It took me a while to actually think about this for a second, but it doesn't specify, because he has a son, probably about 5 years old, which really hits home to me, because my kid is five. But at the same time, I was like, okay, I get that she's in trouble, but did he just leave his son at home alone?
Yes.
Just like, wait, what? I mean, yeah, later on, I think they talk about them having, like, a sitter who, like, steps out to, like, go and get something. I'm just like, God damn, these people are
yes, just horrible, horrible people.
Yeah. And of course, she has sex with him that night, which I'm just like,
of course.
I'm sorry, but if I saw, like, any person, regardless of whether or not they were, like, my best friend or, like, just an acquaintance or just some random person, if I saw that somebody, like, hanging from their intestines, I don't know if sexy time would be the first thing.
Yeah, I'd be like, well, let's get to banging. I didn't get that part either. But speaking of them being assholes, there's a scene where she's in the library and, like, trying to research, I guess, the urn or something, and trying to figure out what's going on. And she takes the really, really insightful notes of three fates, three furies, three mothers. And when she's in the library, she says sorry to some guy that's standing there because her cell phone vibrated. But then she fucking answers it. In the library. And I was like, God damn it. Like, I hope those monsters fucking get you now. And then she's just shouting on the phone to the boyfriend owner guy. And, like, I was just like, God damn, you're in a goddamn library. It's the worst fucking people that, like, have conversations in the library at a regular volume or take phone calls. Ugh, God damn it. So that's my little soapbox. I'll just climb down now.
I mean, I was about to talk about naked people, so I mean, you go on yours. Well, because the scene right after that, you see the mother come back, and there's a bunch of naked people.
Oh, whole mess of
them. I mean, oh, yeah. And a random little piece of fabric being tossed around that would barely be considered a bare midriff.
That's supposed to be her talisman. Cloak. But it's a fucking shirt, man.
It kind of reminds me, though, of, I can't remember if it's called the Shroud of Christ, you know, the thing that he was wearing when he died. So,
or the Shroud of Turim or something. I know what you're talking about.
Okay, good. Hey, people, correct me in the comments. It's okay.
The Shroud of Turin.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but
I think you're close, because that does sound really familiar. But, you know, it's been years. It's probably been worn down. So maybe at one point it was a dress, and then, you know, years of it being passed around, it just got frayed, and now it's just a midriff, and she doesn't wear pants. That's what I can tell, because it really does not cover anything. So if you want nudity, this is your movie, because the other ones do not give you nudity.
Oh, yeah, there's so much goddamn nudity in this. Yeah, it's just all over the damn place.
Well, then she declares death to Rome, which I think I put this down because, like, my husband was just sort of like, death to Rome? Question mark. It's like, why Rome at this point in time in history?
Yeah, I think it's just because that's where she happens to be.
Yeah, I'm sure. But it's like, you know, maybe like 500 years back, you know, 600 years back. But nowadays they have their own problems, and you don't really need to cause them death. They're kind of doing it to themselves right now.
Although, like, she makes the, Mother Lacrimarum makes everybody kind of crazy. Well, not everybody, some people crazy. And
clearly some people.
And there was this long scene that kept going back and forth between, I think it was Asia Argento's character and some guys busting up a car. And I thought, like, man, I really want to smash up a car now.
Like, so you'd be under the line of follower. Got it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. Without a doubt. Like, I'm the person who was, like, born to be an extra. Because, like, what you saw, we saw Little Women. And, you know, I think there was a part where everybody's clapping and I start clapping. I'm like, yeah, yeah. I'm in the movie.
I really wish you had said that out loud at the movie theater. You're like, I'm in the movie. I just looked at you going like, I'm just going to eat another pickle here.
Another drink, please.
I am not drunk enough for this. Can I just say that the, and again, I'm not, violence and things don't bug me, but again, this, the violence in this movie also seems like, God, for lack of a better term, baby Eli Roth. Yeah. It sounds like, I don't know if like Saw came out before this movie. In my head, I think it did, but sort of like he kind of tried to up the ante, but didn't quite make it to where you get the grotesque Eli Roth, but there was definitely like a attempt to like have more blood, more gore, more yeah. violence.
And Saw was apparently, I just looked it up, 2004. So yeah.
Yeah, it's, and there is a scene, for anybody who decides to actually slog their way through this, there is a scene where a woman tosses her baby off the side of a bridge and the baby smacks its head yes. on the bridge. I'm just like, that, I know it's fake, but man, all the kid death is really not making me happy right now.
Normally, if it were like an adult, I would have been laughing. Like the guy who falls in the on the propeller in Titanic, I oh, laugh yeah. every goddamn time. And I rewind and I play and I rewind and I play. But but when it's a baby,
you play Benny Hill music in the meantime.
Boing! Oh no. But also, Hostel came out in 2005, so I think you're right. We're just like right in the thick of it when things start getting like, you know, people just start
gore porn.
Yeah, gore porn.
Yeah,
definitely.
So, but at the same time, it doesn't seem to rise to the occasion as much mm-mm. as some of the other ones do. But I guess their corn syrup mixture finally got better because it actually looks like real blood. The earlier movies definitely had a very like bright red hair dye tinge to it.
Well, I felt like, yeah, it did have that gore porn element, but it was also kind of, I don't know, like proto gore porn, where yeah. it just like, especially with like the violence, it felt more like an older movie from the 70s or 80s.
That's kind of what I was saying, like it still felt like baby Eli Roth. It's like mm-hmm. I know, like you said, it was made after Eli Roth made his yeah. first movie, but at the same time, it's like
Hostel.
It, yeah, and Hostel, I do not pay attention to those movies too much. I just don't care. I like subtext and plot more.
I guess overrated.
Oh, can I just mention one little thing? So this is after so the boyfriend is trying to reach the guy who sent him the urn and to figure out what happened, and they have that one guy who's was he in a coma, or I can't remember exactly what happened to him, but they're visiting him in the hospital, and this was like the weirdest thing that I just noticed was he's talking to either the police officer or somebody, and one of the orderlies or the nurses comes up behind them and just walks through the door carrying an uncapped syringe.
Yes!
Like that's it took me out of their conversation. I'm just like, well, that's not right. Like, what like, kind of hospital is this? Wow, I guess it's what year again? It's 2008. Jesus Christ.
Things are a little loosey goosey in those Roman hotel hospitals, I guess. Oh, I did love the fact that, okay, so at one point she's avoiding, Asia Argento's character, Sara, is avoiding the police for some reason, and there's like a gaggle of girls who,
and some guys, there are some guys in there.
Yeah, yeah, I think I spotted at least one guy.
Don't let the weird goth emo punk makeup throw you off. There was a dude.
But they were just kind of being creepers to the owner boyfriend guy. We'll call him owner boyfriend.
And I think I wrote down, I see the PCP is strong with these ones.
That was actually my comment. But then, like, one of them just kind of grins at at Sara, and then she just kind of chases her down. She's not running, but like,
yeah,
following her. And
it's sort of like that weird, it kind of like that weird Mike Myers thing where he's walking and Jamie Lee Curtis is like running. It's like, how is he keeping up with her?
Exactly. But Sara gets on a like a subway to try to lose her, and she finds out that the lady's on there that's chasing her, and that girl ends up killing some guy who's just kind of in
one of the police officers. Yeah, she says something in Japanese, and I kept replaying it to see if I could figure out what it was, but I needed to go to bed. And it would be one of those things where I'd probably have to write it down, and then I'd have an easier time figuring out what she said. But I was like, I'm not going to dedicate this much time to figuring this one out.
Yeah, I took 3 courses in Japanese, and I couldn't fucking figure it out.
It was really soft spoken too, and I didn't want to keep turning up the TV just to figure it out. Yeah. Like I think it's like her conversation piece was very, very quiet. So I was like, I'm already cranking the TV up and it's late and I don't want to wake anybody else up when they suddenly turn to the, you know, death scene. Because I'm like, nope, I'm out.
Well, what I love is that, okay, so Sara doesn't see her kill the guy. She doesn't know that she did it.
Well, she's being chased by this weird person who, as I said, is pretty much probably on PCP.
Yeah.
I mean, we can obviously spoil for them. These people are supposed to be witches or the follower of the mother. Yeah. I'm never going to pronounce any of their names, by the way. I'm just going to lay that out there right now.
Lacrimarum.
There you go. You go. But yeah, I mean, they're supposed to be followers, and I mean, to be fair, they are being kind of creepy.
Yeah, they're being creepy, but what made me laugh was that Sara kills her.
Oh yeah, just slams her head into the bathroom
door. And I'm like, bitch, you didn't know that she was going to kill you? You don't know that she killed somebody else. You're just randomly killing somebody who happens to be following you. What the fuck, man?
I don't know. I'm actually all okay with killing people who are stalking you. And that one was being extra creepy.
Well, yeah, that's fair. But I'm still like, couldn't you have like gotten the attention of a cop? Oh, no, because you're
running from the cops. Yes.
Without reason. Yeah. Okay. Got it.
Actually, I was going to say, speak of the Japanese thing. So at some point, like, you know, when the dude's kid gets kidnapped, which again, this leads into the whole entire child death scene, which I was really happy they didn't show the whole killing of the kid. They showed his body, but that was about it.
Yeah.
But dude's kid gets kidnapped, and they leave like a bunch of stuff, like his symbols written in blood above his bed. One of them is actually a hiragana symbol.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, it's chi. It's the one that's, it's imagine like an upside down hook, and the hook ball part is basically left with the dash above. It's actually the symbol for chi. And then I was like,
the way I remember it when I was studying was thinking of a cheerleader. Chi.
Okay.
Sorry.
Well, and what I thought was funny was, and I was like going like, I don't know why they chose that, because the other symbols, I was like, they could, for all they know, they probably just pulled it out of like random runes and painted it on there.
Yeah.
But chi, as written hiragana, if you want the pronunciation of that, is actually translated into blood. And so I was actually wondering, is this intentional? I don't think it is, because it doesn't make sense, because the kanji written with the pronunciation of chi is blood, but I'm like, but it's the hiragana symbol, which is, you know, it's like,
yeah,
like I thought way too much on this, because I focused in on that going like, why is chi up there? My first thought was like, what?
So, I bet it's just because Dario Argento thought it looked cool. I'm gonna write symbol-y. blood.
All I'm thinking is he like went into like Microsoft Word and just like started typing in random letters and like turned on like Wingdings or something.
It's a secret message for Dario Argento. Totally rocks.
Blood.
Blood. Oh, speaking of blood, not quite blood, but I love it. There's a part in the end where they're underground, and it's starting to kind of flood.
Yeah. Sara climbed through a pile of...
like shit keeps pouring on her. Shit, poopy all water.
All manners of shit and refuge that no man in which she climbed out. I can't do Morgan Freeman.
Oh, I see. So this is just a retelling of Shawshank. I get it now.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Except she had to kill a witch.
That checks out. Okay. No, I know in Inferno, you loved...
Can we talk about the ghost mother? Because she hears voices this entire time until she finally sees ghost mother. Because I guess like her, what is it? Her parents were ghost killed mom. In a car crash. And so she's led to believe. Yeah.
Not to be confused not with ghost dad.
That's a different movie. And we will never speak of that movie ever again. Ever again.
With he who shall not be named.
But yeah, so she's hearing the voice of her mother who's been kind of like opening all these doors for her and speaking to her and teaching her how to be invisible.
Yes. Like,
when the cop is getting like in that bookstore, when the cop's getting like freakishly close to her and she's like just breathing, he's like, she's invisible. I'm like, this would be so uncomfortable on so many levels.
And apparently but all you have to do it is to concentrate.
Yeah, it's concentrate, like, concentrate. I'm like, so is she literally invisible and she can't be felt? Because he got super close. Yes. It's like, why is there like a weird bulge here where I can't touch the books?
That's what I was
thinking.
Starts
copying like, a feel.
Why do I feel boobies when there's nothing there? Huh. I know that feeling.
Is that cashmere? Why do I feel cashmere?
Poke, poke, poke. Well, I know that in Inferno, you really liked the cat mother witch. Meowther Lacrimarum.
Yes. I remember reading that she was invited back to play her, but she chose not to. She's been long retired, I think, since
And she was
playing.
A little older, so I mean, it's Anya love of Piarona. My life. Yeah, but I hope I'm pronouncing that right. It's Anya Piarona, I think. But yeah, she'd retired. She felt she was too old for it. And, you know, good for her. Instead, they hired Moran Atias. I hope I'm saying that right. But we'll just pretend I am either way.
I just spent my time probably butchering Chinese names earlier. So you're fine.
Check out our mini-show next week. But yeah, I wanted to spotlight we try to spotlight a witch in each of our episodes. And fuck Asia Argento. I wanted to focus on Mater Lacrimarum, Moran Atias, I don't know how to say it, but she's a really pretty lady. She was born in Israel on April 9th in 1981, which is my year. Woop, woop, woop. Although it makes me really
honestly,
sad.
I'm thinking it's going like, she's only 3 years older than me. That's a good age gap. Sorry.
It just makes me sad to realize like she's done so much more with her life. Like, damn it. She's just a couple months older than I am. At the age of 15, she was actually on a show for kids and teens called Out of Focus in Israel. And like many other teens in Israel, she wanted to serve in the Israeli Defense Forces. And I remember when I was in junior high and somebody came from Israel and they were talking about how, yeah, that's the way it is. Like a lot of people want to join the forces. And and it's just it's a different
I thought
culture.
It was like almost a requirement. I thought it was more of like a requirement, like you do this, you do that, and the forces are one of the things that a lot of them do. Or maybe my misunderstanding, but well, like, I think Gal Gadot also serve.
Oh. So unfortunately, like she wanted to serve in the Israeli Defense Forces, but she was diagnosed with meningitis, so she couldn't join. So instead, she, what anybody else would do. She became a rather successful model in Germany and in Italy. And in fact, I think she was a model for Dolce & Gabbana. So, I mean, I think she did okay. And eventually,
she, fine.
She even got her own talk show in Italy. Once again, I'm just sitting here, like, doing the math, like, okay, she was this
You have two podcasts, okay? Don't you dare undersell yourself.
I'm sure she's so jealous of me. In 2012, she started a successful show in Israel called Allenby, which she tried to adapt into a show for America and served as producer in that. She later pitched and developed a movie with Canadian screenwriter, director, slash producer Paul Haggis called The Third Person. Actually, I'm sorry, it's just, no, the, just regular third person, where she played a Romanian gypsy. To prepare for the role, she lived for 4 months in Italy without electricity or running water. And for this, she was also a producer and script consultant. I can talk.
People are the muscle relaxers you're hearing.
And from 2005 to 2006, she was a spokesperson for Milan against graffiti, which I, whatever, okay. But most importantly, she was a spokesperson against animal cruelty. So she's cool. She's committed herself to many good deeds with Artists for Peace and Justice, also known as APJ, where she's actually helped Haiti and people in Haiti evacuate over to Florida after the that terrible earthquake in 2010. And she also raised money for the first free high school in the slums of Haiti. And she's currently a Goodwill Ambassador for IsraAid. And as of 2017, she has become a naturalized citizen of the U.S. So, yay!
Beautiful person. Yeah, never mind. You should feel bad for what you've done with your life.
Yeah, right? It's okay. I've made my peace with it.
Now you're just rickety.
And now I'm just rickety. And now I'm just a 38-year-old with arthritis in my spine. So, yay! I got that going for me. Do you feel like we've properly covered the movie? Was there anything else that you wanted to cover?
I mean, I have like a laundry list of just stupidity notes. I mean, I could go on. I mean, everything from like the ghost mother thing to lesbian couple that she that Sarah stayed with who showed her about the ghost world, which my entire reaction was, man, that would suck. Like, you're just a wandering ghost wandering the earth. Like, unless you could talk to other spirits, that'd be okay. But if you can't, what are you gonna do? Just watch other people bone?
Yeah, apparently. I mean, well, wouldn't you?
Yeah, but you can't do anything about it. I mean, isn't that like, that's like ghost blue balls almost.
If you could hear like ghost change, you'd be like, nice.
No, you're like, I can't do anything about this. Like, I'm not even Patrick Swayze where I can like invade somebody's body. I mean, what the fuck? They just wander around just like doing nothing.
Oh, boy.
Can I ask you a question about one of the weird little scenes? It's where she finds out that like somebody's clearly in the house. She mm-hmm. Before that, she turns a dial on something. Sarah turns a dial, and I wondered like, was that supposed to activate the lights?
I don't know.
She walks into this building. She turns this dial, and I'm like, is that like a light activation? She's supposed to walk upstairs, and the lights will turn off. I'm thinking like, have they never heard of motion sensors? This is like 2008.
Yeah, that was really weird, and I was wondering the same thing. At first, I was like, what is that, like one of those dials for the fan in the bathroom, or
like. She starts going upstairs, and it's like, what the fuck is going on in this whole thing?
That was weird. It's like a timed light, I think.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like a timed light. I'm like, it's 2008. I'm sure motion sensors existed at this point.
Girl, just get the clapper.
Although I just love the when she set her dead boyfriend on fire, when they kill him, he comes back to life, and she sets him on fire and he keeps walking. I'm like, and see, this is why you can't set zombies on fire. It's just a flaming reanimated corpse.
It's now even more dangerous. Good job.
And now it's setting your house on fire. Oh, good for you.
Yeah, done fucked up.
And then, what is that? That weird scene where she goes and visits the old man in the wheelchair to get some answers. And that guy, like, basically sticks that thing in her eye to keep her eye open to see if she has. Oh,
yes.
And I was like, is he about the Clockwork Orange her? I was like, oh, yeah, kind of.
Yeah, kind of. But then, like I said, there's so many weird half-hazards. He finds floaties in her eye. And then he's like, oh, yeah, you're a witch, dude.
For all you know, she's, like, infected with some sort of, like, eye worm.
Oh, I forgot. I totally forgot to mention that it has Udo Kier, who played Father Johannes.
Oh.
I love him.
Oh.
Yeah, he just pops up everywhere. He's awesome. Sorry. He's been in a couple movies with Argento movies. Before this,
I think that name does kind of sound familiar.
Well, in fact, he was in Suspiria as I think he was the psychologist.
Oh no, wait, are you talking about the OG Suspiria?
Yeah, he was Dr. Okay, Frank okay, because
I was gonna say like the new Suspiria that was like that was not a dude.
No, he was Dr. Frank Mandel in the original Suspiria. But obviously he didn't want to, you know, try to adapt that character for this. So he was Father Johannes. So yay. I don't care.
I think the final scene when she finds the place, like there are a couple things leading up to when she finds the place where the Mater and all of her followers are staying. So throughout this entire movie, like, you know, there's rioting in the streets, you know, you want to break people's cars with everybody else, you know, throw babies off of bridges, whatever. So she's in a cab and somebody's driving her to this location, and outside on the street, like, people are carrying like these huge ass guns, there's dead bodies all over the place, and he's driving his cab. And I'm like, I'm very happy that somebody just sits there and goes like, shit's going to hell out here, but damn it, I have to work.
Someone's gotta do it.
It's a dirty job. Someone's gotta do it.
And he seems pretty damn chill throughout the whole thing too. Like,
exactly. He's just driving, going like, yep, yep, there's the dude carrying the guns who shot the two people down the street. Those people breaking the car. Those people are raping that woman. And here's the creepy old house.
Yes, he always seems to have a taxi driver in his movies. Like, in every one. What is up with that?
I'm wondering if it's the same taxi driver, though. I think that there's definitely a huge age gap there between, you know, the 80s to 2008.
Yeah.
That maybe it's not.
A little bit.
Speaking of year gap, by the way, the random squatter in the witch house, or at least who you think is a random squatter, I think he said something along the lines when 30 or 40 years ago, since the Nazis escaped after the war. And in my head, I was like, wait, this movie's supposed to be in 2007, 2008. And I'm backtracking on my math. I'm like, I'm like, uh-huh, yeah. Like, I think he's missed some time there.
And no, obviously the it was a different taxi driver.
Yeah, no, I wish it was
the same person though.
Somehow he gets the same guy over, because he got the same guy for the first two as a taxi driver. IMDb,
taxi driver.
Look, somebody needs to escort his actor or his actor or actress somewhere. Right. Usually his actress.
His daughter.
Did you also think that the pattern puzzle she has to do in order to open the door was a bit too easy?
Yes.
I was watching her. It's like, ding, ding, ding. It's like,
dude, your, I love your puzzles. System. And yeah, that was like a total like letdown.
It's like, I just hit this in order of how it's going up and down.
Yep.
Top to bottom. Well, and then she says like, these are unexplored catacombs. I'm like, how the fuck do you know they're unexplored catacombs, Christopher Columbus? Jesus Christ.
This is my land now.
Well, that detective is now with her, and then he questions what she's doing. Like, all the way through this, it's like,
yes.
It's like, okay, I've saved you, and instead of, like, trying to pull you out of this house, I'm just gonna, like, okay, I'll just follow you as you lead me into this dark area. It's like, what happened to that whole entire, like, I don't trust her. I think she's up to something.
Oh, yeah. That was pretty goddamn ridiculous.
And my, oh my God, this this moment when she gets to meet the mater and all of her followers. My husband, of course, yells out blood orgy.
Yes, right?
But then, like, the mother turns to her and says, like, hello, Sarah. And I was like, wow, that was a really Jareth, like, Labyrinth-esque, like, way of saying it. I was like, well, and that's what I'm going to watch later today. That's a superior movie.
What happened to my work's owner / boyfriend? Forget about the baby.
That baby went over a bridge. Clearly that scene touched me in a way that I was like, oh, this is dark. Oh, yeah, I did make a comment about the dumping shit on her over and over.
Yes, again. I loved it. Oh, God, that was my favorite part in the whole thing. So there's something positive. That was awesome.
And then they just laugh at the end when they finally crawl through the hole and escape.
Yes.
And Mother gets, like, what, stabbed and crushed to death or something. And yeah. All of her followers get... Yeah, and I think I said, like, that seemed too easy. One article of clothing gets destroyed and she dies.
Yes.
Like everybody freaks out. It's like, she takes her shirt, burns it, and it's like, no! It's like, wow, that, you really need to reset your priorities on how you keep your power stored. Because that clothing piece is falling apart.
I think that's, like, the main theme throughout the Mother's trilogy is that the witch is killed very easily and the death scene's pretty lackluster.
Yeah, it's... I mean, they up the blood count with having all the dead bodies or the bodies they were torturing up on the walls, but, like, yeah, most of the killing scenes were just... I don't know. It's... It was funny. It's so stupidly funny. And of course you get the rock opera at the end with the weird lyrics that I was just like, yeah. Oh my God.
I liked it.
I know you did. You would. And that's about it. Those are some of the weird notes I have. I think at one point I even commented that there was, like, a bald witch, and I can't remember exactly what he yells, but he has, like, the most overacting moment in the movie where he's just like, "Awah!" I'm like, what the fuck just happened there? And I was like, okay, dude, tone it down. It's okay.
Just calm down.
I don't think you need to read the script like that. Maybe go back a little bit. Try other options.
And that was Nicolas Cage. Well, it was 2008 and he, or 2007, and he did need the money back then. So,
oh God, yeah,
it wouldn't be that surprising. I guess it's the time where I say, please, please, please help us by listening, subscribing, rating, and reviewing Bedknobs and Broomflicks on Apple Podcasts especially, and over on Podchaser. It helps other people get to know us and to hear about us, and it really, really helps immensely. And, you know, don't stop there. If you like any other podcasters, do them a favor and do the same for them. It, like, you just can't understand how much it helps us. And please remember, you can find Bedknobs and Broomflicks on Twitter and on Facebook, especially on Twitter at Broomflicks. And you can write to us at broomflicks@gmail.com. Go ahead and send us something. If you got a fun story, please, we want to hear about it. Also, I would like to give a shout out to For Your Reference Podcast. I don't know if I mentioned them before, but they are awesome, and we've been friends on Twitter for a long time. So they're awesome. You should check them out after you listen to all of our episodes and subscribe and rate us. I'd like to thank Doug Walters and Red Wire Black Wire for allowing us to use their song Compass. You should check out their music and the music from Doug's new band Oddness. And you can find me on the weekly podcast Cage's Kiss, the ultimate cage cast, with my brother and my best friend. So, Jane, what you got going on?
Oh, you can just find me attempting to alphabetize the rainbow.
What does that even mean? I'm the one on muscle relaxers. What is happening?
The prism is wrong.
Good Lord. So...
You'll hear from us again when we cover Neil Gaiman's book Stardust.
Hey,
we're gonna cover a book, everybody. We do read, I promise.
We're book people. All right. Oh, and until then, what's that got to do with my knob?
Beta Sperion.
Mater Lacrimorum.
Whatever, right? It's just your future, it's right? Fine. Fuck it. Right. Hi, I'm Melissa.
I'm Amy.
And I'm Kate.
And together we make up the Drunk Dish podcast. Love history, love food, love getting absolutely fucking blitzed. Then Drunk Dish is the podcast for you.
Every episode, we explore the quirky and sometimes dark side of food history, adding political commentary and our own flair for the dramatic.
And every episode, we try a new drink and learn the history of our favorite cocktails.
And we drink while we do it. Find us on Google, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We hope that you listen to us soon. Bye.
Bye.